Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of December, Anno Domini 2025. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, ooh, early, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, get off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? And for your edification and delectation? Here comes the news. Cast your mind back to the misty past, the halcyon days of April 1st, 2004, when Google introduced Gmail, which was written by Paul Buckhite, a Webster, New York native, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, do you remember why you picked your Gmail address? Some of us picked our own names. Some of us picked a name that reflected who we are and what we liked at the time. And some of us picked offhand jokes or gags because how long was this thing going to last anyway? Yeah. Well, here we are over 20 years later. Gmail's still around and you're still saddled with the handle your younger self picked, darklordoftheuniverse@gmail.com. Now that you're a professional, that's a tiny bit embarrassing. Also, there are many people who want to change their names for whatever reason, marriage, hiding from their creditors, whatever. Your only recourse up to now is to simply abandon that email address and set up a new one. After all, Gmail addresses are free. But that means managing two accounts if you want to keep anything from the old address or figuring out how to move everything over from one to the other without just a
pain in the butt.
It seems now that Google is slowly, very slowly, rolling out the ability to change your Gmail account's username. There hasn't been an official announcement as of yesterday, no blog post, no keynote moment, but we're starting to see Google's own support documentation mentioning how to do it. It's not showing up in the English documentation yet. This was as of yesterday. I didn't look this morning. So no one knows if it works here in America, but not sure why it wouldn't, but Google's generally slow to roll out new features and does so area by area. So the shift feels overdue. Microsoft Outlook has allowed address changes and aliases for years. Yahoo, Proton, and most enterprise providers treat email addresses as editable metadata, not permanent fixtures. Not being able to easily change your email address wasn't much of a big deal when email addresses were simply contact methods, but the integration of Gmail into authentication, cloud storage, cross-platform identity turned that rigidity into a liability. The new feature, according to the support document, allows you to register a fresh @gmail address and attach it to your existing Google account. You keep your old address. Emails sent to either address land in the same inbox. Your drive files, photo library, YouTube history, app purchases all remain untouched. The process creates a dual address system rather than a replacement, which is the part that matters for most people worried about losing access to services tied to their original credentials. Again, it's a very slow rollout, so don't get excited yet. But soon you'll finally be able to hide that yousuckdude@gmail.com email address from your boss while still maintaining your elite status on Team Fortress 2. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is you'll be able to change your Gmail address. And the choices are, finally, that could be okay. I hope my name is still available. And, gee, what now? So far, and I find this a little shocking these days, we have 160 votes.
Already?
Of which that could be okay is on top. Finally, and I hope my name is available, are tied. And, gee, what now is at the bottom. And, of course, you can vote in the poll. It's very easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And once you've done that, you can also, if you have a question about that or dang near anything else in the computer world, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
I wonder if they'll let you modify it.
What do you mean?
The existing one.
Well, you can already do some things to it. You can do plus addresses, right? So, for example, let's say you were dave@gmail.com. He's not dave@gmail.com. Don't send email to dave@gmail.com. It's not him.
It's going to bounce.
Dave's not there.
Dave's not here, man.
Dave's not home.
So let's say you have dave@gmail.com, and you decide to go to some website, thestore.com,
mm-hmm.
and you want to buy something, and they want your email address.
Right.
Well, there's several ways around that. You can use a duck.com address. You can do all kinds of things. But you can also use a plus address. So you could say your email address, without changing anything at Gmail,
mm-hmm.
you could say your email address is dave@thestore.com. It will still come to you. You will still get that email, but now it will have plus the store in there, which means two things. One, you can create a filter.
Yeah.
And two, if they sell it, you know who sold it.
True.
So that's a really nice, and I think the same thing is true of dot addresses. I think, but I'm not sure that's true. I do know it's true of plus addresses. So you can have essentially multiple addresses
mm-hmm.
at Gmail.
Well, no, what I was thinking is what it's got to be at least 3 or 4 years now that my account got hacked.
Oh, yeah.
And I lost everything. You know, because they just assumed that I was guilty because I was doing this spam and everything else. And I kept telling them, wait a minute, it's coming from Albany. Somebody in Albany. I don't even live there. Never been to Albany. I've driven through it, but no. But they didn't want to hear it. They didn't care. They just said, open up another email address. So I did, and I put my call sign in it, but they wouldn't let me put my full call sign in it.
What?
Yeah, because it's K3WHD. All I could do was the K. They wouldn't allow the 3, WHD. So, yeah, I had to put that in there, and they wouldn't let me put that in there. So I was like, oh, heck with it. I dropped the 3, so it's just K-W-H-D. And I wanted to see if I could change it to put the 3 back in there, because that's my call sign.
Sure, of course.
And that'd be interesting to see.
Well, yeah, give it a try. See what happens.
Yeah, I'll have to give it a shot.
It isn't. It may not be available yet. You would do that through the settings, I suppose. Again, I've not seen the English translation of the instructions, so I'm not entirely sure how it's done.
I'll give it a shot and see what happens.
But you know, keep checking the their blog and keep checking their help stuff, and it'll show up here in English at some point. But yeah, it's, and you know, our email address now really is our identity on the web. You know, almost mm-hmm. everybody uses you because it's guaranteed unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be when you made a web account for like your bank, you had to do a username and password.
Right.
And then everyone started using their email address for username. And now everyone uses email address.
It's also easier for the programmer.
Yeah.
If I have to grab your email address,
mm-hmm.
Grab your username and check it against the list of already done usernames and then go back and say, no, that one's taken, try again. Another one and it's that one's taken. And it's just a pain in the neck for everybody. Now it's just use your email address. You're the only one on the planet that has that email address.
Yep.
Go.
It's unique. It's already been verified.
Go.
You're using it in other places. So, yeah, you're good to go all the way around.
That's why when my daughter was born, I took out her email, her name, as a domain. And there's a woman who's been asking for it pretty much every year for the last 32 years, and I'm not gonna give it to her. It's my daughter's. It's the only one with her name, and so it's the only one she gets.
Bless you. I just found a picture of Dave's ham setup. Do you remember you left this on the internet?
That's an old one.
Yeah, and it's also got your motorcycle on there, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, people have asked me, you know, about my, my call sign. And I says it, because on my bike, it was 3WHD, three-wheeler Harley-Davidson. And that's why that was my plate on the bike that I used to have. I had that bike for 20 years. and saw, put many a miles on that thing and had some really good times all the way down to Daytona and up to Lake George quite a bit. But that's how I came to that call sign, because you can go on the website and request, see if certain call signs right. are available. And K, because it's got to start with either a K, an N, or an A for it to be in the U.S. So I thought, well, K. So I tried the K, put in the 3WHD. Boom, they came back a couple days later and said, yeah, you can have it. Cool, I'll take it. And I've been that ever since I re-got into ham radio, which is now about 6 years.
Six seems like 30. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, it. I mean, I go back all the way back to the old, and a lot of folks out there will remember the days of the CB radio.
Sure.
I mean, we used to take our CB radio, take the cover off it, and do what we call pirating, and put in other crystals. Because back in those days, you had to get crystals.
Oh, yeah.
And we'd hook up crystals to go up to other bands, like the 10-meter band and that, and listen there. And because back then, the cycle was really good for getting out, and the antennas, you could
and a lot
skip
of the,
around the world.
A lot of the early mobile phones were not encrypted.
Right.
So I had a Bearcat scanner.
Yeah.
Back in the day. So we'd hear somebody make a phone call, "Hey honey, I'm working late tonight." And then it wraps around a couple more times and we hear the same voice, "Hi honey, I'm on my way over."
Yo, yeah. Yeah.
Vomit. I've talked about this before. There was a program called Vomit, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Telephones. You run it and it would pick up conversations over Wi-Fi. When people were talking over Wi-Fi. And it would grab it was a brilliant piece of programming. It would grab the files. It would turn them into the audio. It would put them all together, all the packets together properly, and leave you with a bunch of audio files on your computer to listen to. And I was teaching a course in security at RIT, and I decided what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my laptop into the quad, into the, you know, the mm-hmm. student area. And I'm going to sit with Vomit running, and I'm going to record some conversations and play it for my students what I can, just to say, look, you got to be careful what you say over the phone.
Yeah.
This happens. I recorded about 2 hours of stuff, went back to listen to it. There was not a single conversation I felt comfortable
repeating,
playing for students.
Even though they're the ones that said all those words.
They were the ones that said all those things.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's what a lot of folks, you know, and they go, well, I don't have a ham radio license or all that stuff. Well, you don't need to. You can
not
do,
to listen.
Right, to listen. You can listen all you want. And there are plenty of websites that they call SDRs. And you can go to those sites and tune in on channels and literally scan that channel and listen in.
Sure.
You can't talk because, you know, you're just sitting listening. On, but any of the bands, whether it's down from, up at 2 meters all the way down to 160 meters.
There was a recent investigative study posted by UC San Diego and University of Maryland that basically said a lot of internet satellite communication is not encrypted.
Nice.
Including voice calls, text messages, consumer internet data traffic. The industry's been back since the SS7 days, back in the Bearcat day, encrypt your traffic. For 40 years, we've been telling them to encrypt their traffic, and they still aren't.
So it is possible that when I go to a bank or something, my data are going unencrypted up to a satellite somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
But, well, for the most part, your computer encrypts it first.
Right.
Maybe that's why they're doing it. Your computer encrypts it first. The satellite doesn't need to encrypt it again.
True, and that saves them cycles and battery and everything else.
Which used to be a big deal, but isn't anymore.
Right. I don't know. Oh, I started talking about this before the show. I got to tell people this. I discovered a thing. I had heard about a thing that Zorin did. Zorin OS, a version of Linux. And I didn't. I talked a little bit about it on the show at one point, but I had not verified it, and I verified it this week. If you have a program like Microsoft Office, you download the EXE or the ISO, or a program like VLC, and you go on their website and download the EXE for Windows. On Xorin, you double-click on it, and Xorin comes up and says, you know, it says it differently, of course, but what it's basically saying is, you know, there's already a version of this for Xorin already. So you've got two choices. I can either install the Xorin version, mm-hmm. or I can install all the Windows background stuff, which is essentially wine and bottles. Which do you want to do? And if you, so that's for VLC. So you can, I mean, it will guide you gently
through it.
Through it.
Mm.
And for Microsoft Office, it comes back and says, you know, there's an alternative called LibreOffice, which is already on your system.
Yeah, because all the Linux.
Why don't you try that? It's free and does all the same stuff and reads and writes Word documents. Or we can run the web version for you and make web apps on your desktop. When you double-click them, you go to the website. Or I can install wine and bottles and install the real program. Well, but the point is, it gives you
options
as opposed to, oh, you can't do this.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Pick a program to open this document with.
Right. So yeah.
If I knew, I wouldn't be asking you. Right.
But yeah, so well, and that's another thing about Linux. It's a program called File. So I can say File space and a file name. And it'll come back and say, oh, this is a Word document, or oh, this is a PDF, or oh, this is a text file, or whatever it is, and give you more information. But the important part for most people is just what kind of file is it?
Well, that's also one thing that we have said, though, you know, for a long time. I'll say over 80% of the people out there can use LibreOffice. They don't need all the bells and whistles for Office.
I'd say 90%, but sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to get
yep,
in.
Yep, yep.
Be conservative. Because, you know, granted, and going back to your analogy, it's like driving a new car. You might have to look around and do this or do that. But they all do the basic stuff. And all right, I'll go up with your percentage. 90% of the people don't use half
right.
of the features, either in Word or Excel or PowerPoint. They're in there just to create a quick, say, Word document and send it off to somebody because, you know, they need to explain something over this or put out a quick spreadsheet. They're not getting into all the formulas and everything else like an accountant would.
They're and most of those are there.
Yeah, they're all there. They just might be in a different place. And right. there's great YouTube videos to teach you how to get around in those newer programs.
I had a friend of mine say, I tried LibreOffice and Average isn't there. No, Average is there.
Yeah.
He said, no, I tried it. Okay. You typed AVG, didn't you? I said, yeah, that's Average. Well, in somebody LibreOffice, you use the whole word.
Yep.
Hey, Dolores.
I was thinking the other way around.
Yeah.
You typed in average and it didn't know what you meant.
Right.
Although LibreOffice might have come back and said, did you mean AVG?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And of course, no ads, right. No bloat, yep. No cruft. Right. Yeah.
Well, then how can it be good?
How can it possibly be any good?
That's me.
That's so yeah. Here's the thing that I don't, they just recently had an event at Microsoft. We can talk more about this after the break if we run in. Microsoft just went into panic mode, and they actually called Bill Gates back. He hasn't run Microsoft since Hector was a pup, but they had a big meeting because 400 million people are not upgrading to Windows 11.
Yep.
And they don't know what to do.
Oh,
well,
we appreciate that.
Nobody needs Windows 11 unless you have a new PC that doesn't run 10 well or whatever. And so they had to force people to go to 11, and people still don't want to go because they like 10. 10 works for them. 10 does what they want to do.
Although 10 years ago, you couldn't pry Windows 7 out of my hands. I don't want Windows 10.
Right.
Well, Windows 7 came out, and it was rock solid from the day one. It didn't even need the service patches.
8 was such a problem that it soured everyone on Windows upgrades.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and the other part of the problem is, for many people, you have to buy a new computer. In this economy, I don't think so.
Ain't happening.
There was a really great open letter to Microsoft from Consumer Reports.
Wow.
Saying, basically, how dare you? Computers sold as recently as 2023 cannot upgrade to Windows 11.
Yeah.
People generally keep their computers 10 years or more. You know, how can you abandon support for all these people, especially since you're making support for people who pay you?
Right.
Well, it goes back to what Nick said.
Yeah.
It's not about us. It's about the shareholders. And unless they're giving a new product out there, a new version, that they can sit there and tell the shareholder, well, we got now 11 out there, and it'll make you more money, even though most of the crowd behind the scenes aren't going to that because it doesn't offer anything.
Well, and the other thing is, rumor has it, and I normally don't talk about rumors, but this one makes sense to me. The hardware manufacturers have been saying people aren't buying new PCs. What do we do?
And the chip shortage.
Well, before that, and Microsoft said, well, we can make like TPM 2.0, which most machines don't have, and this and that, and you'll sell more machines. That's great. Let's do that. Now, of course, with the chip shortage, and particularly with the RAM prices going through the roof and multiple companies stopping making consumer RAM, the industry, and that's the other problem. 4 gig of RAM. We're going to see in the future, I think, prices like the 80s and 90s when RAM was so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, a 4 gig machine is going to cost what an 8 or 16 gig machine costs today.
I just read an article about that. Low end computers are dropping from the 8 gigs of RAM and 256 storage back down to 4 RAM and 128 storage.
And Windows does not run well under that.
Yeah, no, let alone another program on top of it.
Right. Now, Windows by itself doesn't run well under that.
I was going to say, it's lucky it can get out of its own way.
On the other hand, Linux flies like a top on 4 gig of RAM and 128 gig of hard drive. Now, yes, you can't store your 45 years of pictures on 128 gig of RAM, but in terms of the operating system and the programs you run, they fit comfortably in 128 gig of RAM. I've got a laptop right now that I just got in, 4 gig of RAM and 64 gig of hard drive space. It's a little tight if you're going to do a lot, but it runs everything. And if you keep your data on thumb drives or in the cloud or whatever, you've got more room than you're ever going to need.
And I had read something about the TPM 2.0 requirement. A lot of computers that fail Windows 11 compatibility because it doesn't have TPM 2.0, go look in your BIOS. It may be there, but turned off because it wasn't needed for anything.
One of the laptops I have that somebody gave me because it won't run Windows 11 has a TPM 2.0 BIOS, and Microsoft still says, nope, can't run it.
Well, the software that I just got, that I'd been waiting for over 3 years, that was one of the big issues when it first came out, the new version, that it needed that certification, and it was blocking them for people doing the update. So they put the programmer went in, put out a patch within 2 days that corrected that issue for them. It patched that so it blew by that and it let you install the program.
Yep. And talking about not enough disk space, remember, you need 3 times as much disk space if you're going to do an upgrade to Windows as the download. So if it's a 50 gig download, you need 150 gig of disk space. Because it downloads it, there's 50 gig gone. Mm-hmm. Then it makes a backup copy of what was there, that's 50 gig gone. And then it has to do the update out in RAM before it puts it in, that's another 50 gig gone.
That's why installing from an external flash drive is sometimes helps, because that
sometimes easier.
Takes off that first 50, yeah.
But what that means is, for Linux, because little updates happen all the time, you rarely run out of disk space. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. But why are you just listening? You could be calling in 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far. There's a whole lot more Soundbites coming your way. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Doug from Webster, New York on the line. What's up, Doug?
Hi, I have a question about Apple.
Yeah.
About music.
Yep.
I have an iMac. Most of and all of my songs that I have either downloaded off CDs in the olden days and or have purchased off the Apple's iTunes store are all on the iMac. But when I open up a, we have a MacBook Air. They're not all there. They didn't all migrate over. They're all on my iPhone, but they're not on my Air. I know that there's a checkbox system on the iMac. You know, you can check them or uncheck them. But what I want to focus on, if I could, is the one function called playlist. On my Air, the only playlist I have is Christmas, which, you know, right now is fine. But I've built many playlists. They show up on my iPhone. They show up on my iMac, but they don't make it to the Air. The albums are there. The songs are there. But the only playlist I have is Christmas. And I don't know how to ask it to bring them all over.
You would
show them.
You can export your playlist from one device and import your playlist to the other device.
Okay.
Or there's a, I'm trying to bring my music app up now. There is an automatic syncing feature if you sync everything through iCloud.
All right. And I even, just last, well, 2 weeks ago, I bought music, or I think it call it Match.
Yes, iTunes Match is another service that takes music you didn't buy from the iTunes digital store and uploads it to your iCloud account, so then you can see all of those songs on your other devices.
Yeah.
So you don't have to manually copy them from place to place.
So how do I drag or grab a new, well, not a new playlist, like I have a jazz playlist, didn't make it to the Air, the MacBook Air.
Yeah, on the
only one
on the iMac that has the playlist, you export that playlist, and then take that file and AirDrop it or email it to the other computer and import that playlist. And I'm in the process of putting a link in for that now.
So there will be a link on our website at soundbites.org.
Okay.
Scroll down to the links we heard on the show, latest links heard on the show, and it will be the top one.
It's slightly different depending on which version of macOS you have on each computer.
Yeah, they're all different.
Yeah, so at the top of the top of the website, it lets you pick what OS you're using. And then
can I ask a second? Or,
sure.
I'll try all that. Can I ask a second question about a drone? I have a DJI drone, and I use my iPhone as my viewing screen. When I take photos, they all end up on the SD card that's riding around in the drone, but they don't make it to my iPhone unless I physically ask them to. Is there a way to, like, I'd like to look at the photos right away, but I can't until I get home and put my SD card into my my laptop or my iMac.
Well, you could get an SD reader for your phone. That'd be one way to do it.
Oh.
Is there a way
to download it?
Yeah. So the DJI has to save the file somewhere.
Yes.
In the DJI app. I don't have DJI myself. I've got a Horizon Blade. but in the app itself, does it let you change the download location?
Oh, I'll look there.
So you might be able to save it locally on the iPhone rather than, well, no, I guess that would be remotely. So the drone takes the picture and saves it locally on its SD card. There may be an option to copy it to the iPhone immediately as well.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
DJI Fly has an app called Quick Transfer.
Okay, Quick Transfer.
Which is basically a wireless download, whether it's Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever. And then you connect to the drone, tap View Album, and select and download those pictures. But again, it's not real time. You do it in batches afterwards.
After you land, but while you're still wherever you're at.
Right.
Okay. All right. I'm going to complicate it and say some of the photos show up and most do not on my phone while I'm standing out there in the field. Some of the photos show up right away and like it's usually the first one. I thought, wow, I got the first one, but I didn't get any other photos until I get home and look at them closer on my iMac.
I wonder if it's the size of the file. No, it shouldn't. Each photo should be about the same size.
Okay.
Yeah, there is in the DJI Fly app, in the camera section, there should be an auto sync option.
Okay.
And make sure that's enabled.
Okay, I'll enable it.
Yeah, it may be disabled because certainly, obviously, that would use more battery and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it may be disabled by default.
All righty. Well, thanks very much, and I wish you all three everybody a happy new year.
And the same to you, Doug. Thanks.
Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, generally there are ways to do the things you want to do. It's just a matter of where are they and how do you find them. Sometimes one of the things that I've always said separates the gurus from the average person is when a guru gets a new program, the first thing they do is look at all of the options in every menu.
Yep.
That you know, see, and you find things and think, oh, that'll be useful. Which isn't necessarily true of the average person. You want to do the things you want to do, and that's it.
Now, everything I'm seeing is once the photos are captured on the DJI's SD card, then you can transfer them to your phone. But I'm not seeing
I don't know that it's automatic.
Right, and I'm not seeing anything that says live while you're, because you don't want to have to stop it. While you're flying and import photos for you to look at. No.
Well, right. Well, yeah. And exactly. And these aren't the biggest processors on these drones, so it may well be that they don't do two things at once.
Yeah, and taking your focus off of, like Steve was saying, flying the, the thing
or crashing
into a tree or something.
Taking the processor's focus.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're not powerful processors.
No, by
it's
no
not
means.
Like, it's not like the one in your computer.
Not even close.
All right, back and to the... Sorry?
I say the FAA just gutted the RC model industry this week. A new new regulation bans all Chinese imports, including DJI, including motors. As a matter of national security, they're banning these things.
Sure.
Motor. A motor is national security. Transmitters, receivers. So basically everything you need to build and fly your RC models is now banned.
Excellent. Good to know.
And everyone's mad at the AMA for not fighting harder. The Academy Model Aircraft, there are the main lobby.
the American Medical Association? Who cares?
Yeah, the main lobby trying to push this. But Homeland Security has been trying to cancel RC aircraft for 20 years.
Yeah.
Especially drones that have gotten to be so easy to use for non-flyers. There's sort of even a stigma in the RC world is that we don't want drone people.
Right.
You want to learn how to fly. Push a button and it goes up and follows a pattern and then comes back down again. But examining crops and pipelines and electric lines, extremely useful.
Right. Well, they use it for spraying, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of farmers that use drones to go and spray their crops now. I mean, the drones are big enough that they can sit there and put tanks on them and then go out and spray their crops.
The tail number on one of my airplanes actually belongs to a DJI crop sprayer.
Well, a friend of mine in Wyoming says, I don't ride my fence anymore.
Yeah.
I send my drone out.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well, a number of farmers have also used it, drones out for, they'll put their cows out, say, in different pastures and to try to find out, depending on, a lot of these farms are huge. And, if they use a drone just to go out and see, well, they're over in the east corner instead of the west corner, you save time.
Right.
Than going out there searching around.
Well, and part of it is this: as the technology changes, the laws have to change. I do understand that. For example, it used to be that it was not illegal to build your own gun because it was a hard thing to do. It required a lot of different pieces and parts and tools.
Especially to do safely.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that it didn't blow up in your face. So if you built your own firearms in your own home, there actually was no law against that. Now, of course, with 3D printers, where pretty much any jamoke who can flip a switch can print a gun, there are now rules coming. So I get that it changes as the technology changes. I get that part.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next call is Bill from Lima, New York. What's up, Bill?
Well, I've listened to you for quite some time, and you offer a lot of solutions. I really enjoy your program.
Thank you so much, Bill. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen.
A couple of years ago, just before Radio Shack went out of business, I bought a tremendous amplifier. It's called an RCA Professional AM/FM Amp Receiver, Audio Video Receiver, STAV3870. And I'm quite pleased because I have other equipment attached to it. However, it has a problem developed on the volume control. The volume control is one of those controls that turn very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what has happened to it is it's picked up static. And if you turn it a little, it jumps up to 90 miles an hour. If you turn a little more, it jumps down to you can't hardly hear it. So you really can't adjust it to a listening level. Now, what I'm asking is, now that I understand somebody there is a ham, and most ham operators do their own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
what I need is a amplifier radio repairman, which there aren't any anymore.
Right, yeah.
So let me make a suggestion from the non-ham radio side, if I may.
Yes.
If that knob has a set screw, take it out, pull off the knob, and blow some air in there.
Well, what I would also suggest is if you can get into it, because what it sounds like is this is a very old unit.
And if, it's only about 3 years old.
That's still old enough that, you know, it can build up stuff, you know, just from being in the house and that, you know, dust and dirt and everything else, humidity. What you might want to try is some simple contact spray.
Right.
If you spray a little contact spray in there, one, you know, with it unplugged, you can buy electrical contact spray, spray it, and as you're turning it, and it will help free up, you know, the contacts in there, so as you're turning the knob up and down, because what it's doing is usually it's a plate, and that knob is going up the plate and then back down. And, you know, it might be sticking because, you know, again, who knows how long it, you know, it picks up stuff and everything else in the air and that, and if you have pets and all that, it's just like our computers. You know, they suck in a lot of stuff that we don't realize, and it can build up in there if you're running it a lot. So try, one, blowing it out a little bit, or you could use a vacuum cleaner to suck out any dust or that inside it, and then try a little contact spray.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll give them all a try.
Yeah, it looks like there's a commercial radio repair shop in Rochester on Carter Street, that they do big commercial radios, but maybe they'll at least know somebody that might do a small commercial radio.
If anybody's listening who's a small radio repair person.
Yeah. They're next to the Home Depot off of 104 in Rondacoit.
The other thing I would suggest is there's a local ham group here in Rochester. It's called Ra-Ra. And some of the folks within Ra-Ra, they do a lot of their own work in that, on their radios and that type of stuff. So you might want to reach out to them. We meet always on the first Wednesday of the month at the Boy Scout Club on Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road. You're welcome to come and visit there. And some folks might be able to help you.
Hmm? You're going to post Ra-Ra?
Yeah.
Might be able to help you with your situation there.
And Steve's going to post a link once he finds it to the Rochester area.
Because I know of a couple members that get into rebuilding stuff and everything else, and they might be able to help you also.
Okay, I'll try it.
Yeah,
excellent, Bill. Thanks for calling. Have a great holiday.
You too. Happy New Year.
Yep.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to say, one of our faithful, and I mean very loyal listeners, Dolores, called to thank us for all the great stuff that we put out there.
We love you, Dee.
And her loyalty to our program. She's been with us for decades, just like us. You know, she's been there supporting us through all the drives and everything else. She's been a great supporter, and just called to thank us for all the great work and information that we offer out there to you folks, and with continued keep up the good work, which we plan on doing.
That is the plan. That is the plan. So yeah, there's
somebody.
We're seeing law changes that at some level make some sense, right? If it becomes too easy to do something that used to be hard, then laws change to take that into account. And I get that. I do. Some of them don't make sense to me, but then nobody's paying me to have them make sense. So
we always wonder, that must have made sense to somebody at the time. But
somebody somewhere.
It doesn't make sense to anybody now.
Right. Right. What?
All right.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Phil from Greece, New York. What's up, Phil?
Hi. So I'm wondering whether it's worthwhile to upgrade to a larger solid-state drive on my laptop. Let me just give you the details real quick. It's a HP laptop. I've got 32 gigs of RAM. The hard drive is 256 gig. According to the manual, I can upgrade to 512 gig hard drive, and I'm just wondering if it's worthwhile. When I look at my settings, I've used about a quarter of the capacity of the hard drive. And I, listening to you, you gentlemen making mention that the prices are going up on chips and drives because of artificial intelligence, and I always try to future-proof my computers when I can, so I'm wondering if it's worthwhile to go ahead and purchase a larger disk drive for my laptop.
Yeah, hot take, if you can afford it, do it. Yeah. Now is the time, because it ain't going to get cheaper.
So I had a 2-terabyte SSD on my Christmas list. And when I put it on my Christmas list, it's $110.
Sure.
Today, it's $230.
Yep.
Somebody's please.
So, yeah, and get that, it now.
And that's like only in a month.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't get it.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say if it is within your budget, Phil, get it and get it quick.
Okay. All right, you have confirmed my suspicions. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Especially now that Crucial is gone.
Well, and the Crucial's not gone.
Yeah.
Micron has ended the Crucial brand for now.
Yep.
Because they can sell exactly the same memory they were selling to consumers.
Yep.
They can now sell that memory to AI companies for 3 or 4 times the price.
And those were the SSDs we always used in the shop because they're decent price at decent capacity. So now we want to find another good brand. I'm finding cheap knockoff brands I've never heard of.
And that,
an 8-terabyte for $99. No, I don't trust that at all. But, so Samsung, the Samsung Evo brand is good, but that's pretty expensive.
That's not cheap.
So I'm, there's got to be another middle-tier brand similar to what Crucial drives were.
I don't know that there's going to be one.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is the complete end of cheap RAM and cheap SSDs for now, at least. While we're in the AI bubble, assuming it is a bubble, until and unless that bubble bursts, RAM prices are going to be way high. I mean, look what happened to graphics cards.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. It's any publicly traded company has a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to maximize profits. That's their job.
Yeah.
And they do that by charging more for the same product. If you can charge 4 times as much for the same product, you would be fired if you didn't. So that means instead of selling it to me for $100, they sell it to Grok for $400, they're going to do it.
And they can use the excuse that during COVID, shipping delays and manufacturing productions raised a lot of prices, and people kept paying it. So when the production came down and costs came down, they kept those higher prices because people are paying it.
Right. It's the old thing. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're going to pay my price, is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of us move to Linux because it uses less RAM, less disk space, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not feasible for everybody. All right, listen. That music tells us the first hour of this show is done, but do not despair. There's a whole other hour coming of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, and more you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. It's Soundbites, and it's right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you because we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
Can I go feet first?
You can if you want to. Hold your nose. Otherwise, you get a lot of water up your nose. It's not good. Unless that's what you want. Clear out your sinuses.
Yeah. Ooh, could be.
Been there, done that. Microsoft wants to develop, this is the Microsoft news, by the way. Microsoft wants to develop tech that could translate its code base to Rust and is hiring people to make it happen. My goal is to eliminate every line of C and C++ for Microsoft in 2030, said Microsoft distinguished engineer Galen Hunt. Our strategy is to combine AI and algorithms to rewrite Microsoft's largest code bases, he added. Our North Star is, and I quote, one engineer, 1 month, 1 million lines of code. That explains why Microsoft's code is not great.
Yeah.
They've already posted a job ad for a principal software engineer who will be expected to work on the tools Microsoft is building to pull this off. Microsoft offers a vast array of products. The site msportals.io lists over 500 active online portals for managing Microsoft products. The company also has a huge internal IT estate. Of course, we've seen how AI has already screwed up some of Microsoft's code, so maybe brush up on your Linux skills before you need them. Microsoft is rolling out hardware-accelerated BitLocker in Windows 11 to address growing performance and security concerns by leveraging the capabilities of system-on-a-chip and CPU. BitLocker is the native full disk encryption feature in Windows that protects data from being readable without proper authentication. During normal device boot, it relies on the Trusted Platform module, the much-beloved TPM, to securely manage encryption keys and automatically unlock the drive. BitLocker isn't as secure as it could be, and decrypting the drive during boot takes time, even on fast machines. And as a reminder, if you're using BitLocker, you better have several verified and current backups. Decrypted backups. Because if you lose the drive, you cannot recover the data. Let me repeat that. You cannot recover the encrypted data. Not you, not drive savers, not nobody.
Ain't happening.
Microsoft is strengthening the security posture of enterprise collaboration by automatically enabling critical messaging safety features in Microsoft Teams. They have announced that they will switch several protective messages settings to on by default starting on January 12th, 2026, next week, well, week and a half, affecting tenants who rely on standard configurations. These include, I love this name, weaponizable file type protection, malicious URL protection, and report incorrect security detection. So if your company is using Teams, you may start seeing messages about why you can't do what you want to do. Move along, citizen. Who do you think owns that computer anyway? Microsoft announced that security administrators will soon be able to block external users from sending messages, calls, or meeting invitations to members of their organization via Teams. The new features will start rolling out in January, integrating Microsoft Teams with Defender for Office 365 and enabling admins to manage blocked external contacts through the tenant allow slash block list with the Microsoft Defender portal. Security admins can add, delete, and view blocked external users and domains directly from the Defender portal. What this means is that if you regularly add outside vendors or customers to your team chats, your admins are going to be very busy, and your vendors and customers are going to be annoyed. Move along, citizen. Who do you think owns that computer anyway? We know you own your own questions, which you can ask us by giving us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Apparently, after Galen Hunt posted that big thing about moving to Rust, the internet exploded, and he quickly said, no, that doesn't mean AI.
He said AI. He said right in his statement AI. He said, and I quote, our strategy is to combine AI and algorithms to rewrite Microsoft's largest code bases.
Yeah, that's not what I meant.
He said it, but he didn't mean it. What is he? Never mind. And Rust is the new hotness right now.
That's a memory safe language, isn't it?
Supposed to be.
So that thing that Apple has done with their new chips about enforcing memory integrity protection to stop every buffer overrun, that would stop like 90% of all of the bugs that get found and exploited.
Right. So in that sense, it's good. The problem is I don't know how mature Rust is because it's not a particularly old language. I haven't played much with it myself. And so I don't know how mature it is. I don't know how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas C++ has been around for decades and is well understood by millions of programmers. and both of the people who know Rust really are new at it.
When I was in programming school...
Back when I was...
C was a future language that might be used someday, let alone C++.
I learned C from the white book.
Yeah?
The original Kernighan and Ritchie white book, which was just basically, here's what it does, go forth and see. that was pretty much it, yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Webster, New York. What's up, Dan?
Well, first of all, Fortran is the programming language of the future.
Tell you what.
It was the second language I learned.
For decades, when anybody asks me what's the one thing if they ask me what's the one thing I had to learn to be a computer programmer, I would say typing.
Yeah.
Take a typing course.
Yep.
But second is Fortran or COBOL. You will always have a job.
And then PL1.
And then PL1. Yep. Go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's on me. Okay, I've got an old Mac. It's running Yosemite. And I've been using it to scan files. And I've got over 4,000 files. I'm trying to move on to a USB stick since I'm not online. I can't back it up. And I did that, and I've got maybe on the USB stick... I've got maybe
120
there.
Yeah, 126.
And a bunch of CR2s.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing with USB sticks. Most of them are FAT64 or XFAT.
Yeah.
And the limitation of XFAT is you can have 126 files at the root directory, and that is it.
Okay.
If you put them,
why am I getting CR2s?
CR2 is a Canon RAW image format.
Right.
Right.
If you put them in a folder, you can have as many as you want up to the capacity of the drive.
Or reformat it as a Mac drive.
Or reform it as a Mac drive.
Unless you know you're going to take it to a PC.
Right.
Well, I'm taking it over to a Mac that I'm running Zorin on.
Then it has to be FAT.
Right.
To be read inside Zorin.
Right. So what you want to do is put all of those files in a folder and put as many as you want. The CR format also is when you download something and it doesn't finish downloading, it's a download.cr. is the end of the file name. So the thing is, you've got a bunch of those somewhere, whether they're coming from the original disk or because your disk is full and it can't do anything else. So the way to fix all that is reformat that drive or just delete all the files from it.
Yep, I'll format it. I'm using my Windows machine.
Right. Reformat
Don't format it NTFS. The Mac can't write NTFS.
Right. So it's XFAT or FAT64 or FAT32 or whatever the format tells you, just FAT. And then create a folder and put everything in the folder.
Okay.
You then should be able to fit as many files as will fit on that disk. But the maximum number of things at the root level is 126. There's no limit to anything below that. So if you create one folder, you can put, you know, depending on the size of the stick, a billion files in it, or a billion folders, each with a billion files.
Okay. All right, I will do that.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, have fun. Yeah.
Might be
that's something
easier.
Create a bunch of folders. Doesn't come up a lot because, A, people do tend to put things in folders.
Yeah.
And, B, people generally don't have that many files at a root level.
Yeah. It might be easier to use a hard drive rather than a flash drive. Definitely faster.
True. if you buy an SSD. Of course, now it'll be 7 times more expensive to buy that. But
if the computer's on the same network, you can use file sharing.
You just do it via file sharing. And you can file share from Zorin to a Mac as well. I've been just sharing things over Bluetooth. I turn on Discoverable on the machine it's coming from. I turn on Search Bluetooth on the machine it's going to. That machine comes up and says, here's what's on Bluetooth. I say, oh, yeah, that machine there. And then I can send it or I can receive it from the other machine or do whatever I want to do. And it works like a charm. It's a little slower over Bluetooth than it is over Wi-Fi, but it's also so much more convenient.
And it looks like Samba is pre-built into Zorin.
Yes.
Which is the Windows file sharing protocol that everyone uses.
That everyone uses.
Because Windows uses it.
Right. So if you've got file sharing turned on your Mac.
You can turn file sharing on if you want to share out from the Mac. You don't.
Which is
what you'd want to do to get to the PC. Yeah.
Right.
To share in from the from another computer, you don't need file sharing turned on.
Right. But in his case, he turns file sharing on to whatever folder or whatever his music is. And then on the other machine, he goes into basically, I don't remember what it's called on Zorin, basically the network neighborhood. What's on the network? And he should see that machine or at least that folder. And you should then be able to open it up and drag and drop just like you can anything else.
Yeah, I've gotten to where I use, and it comes free, is with each one of my Google accounts, 15 gig of free storage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've set it up on all, my computers. For each email address, you can have up to 3 drives that you can quickly access. And depending on, I've got one for my ham radio stuff, one for my personal stuff, and then other for BS stuff. And it just keeps it all separate.
Which is probably the fullest one.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, it is.
Yeah.
I have to go in there. I get reminders.
It's the junk drawer.
Yeah, it is. And it is, but it's made my life so much easier because I can just go in there because I'll get warnings. Oh, you're hitting close to the 15 gig limit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's no problem. I just go in, boom, dump it.
I looked at my old machine. When I built my new machine, I moved everything over. I didn't move over the temp directory, but I looked in it. There's like 8 gig of stuff just in the temp directory that I never bothered to delete.
Yeah.
Now I look at half of it and think, I don't even know what this is. I have to go back and look at it someday. That's why it's a junk drawer now.
I got so spoiled by Greenlight. My dash cam SD card filled up the other day on the way to work. And so, I'll just upload it to my Google account at work. I'm used to it taking 10, 15 minutes to transfer a 64-gig flash drive.
Sure.
13 hours.
Yes, it did.
On Spectrum's 100 megabit.
I bought...
Remember when 100 megabit was fast?
I remember that. I remember getting 10 megabits and thinking, holy moly, yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah.
I bought both my wife and my daughter, and myself, dash cams for Christmas. And I bought 256-gig cards because that's the largest micro SD
Which
card.
Dash cam did you get?
Which what?
Which dash cam did you get?
I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but...
The one that was on sale?
The one that was on sale. I didn't. It wasn't the most expensive. It wasn't the cheapest.
But you don't have to have a subscription or anything.
No, none of that nonsense. Locally. I made sure it was none of that.
Yeah, because a lot of folks don't realize some of these you get into, and all of a sudden they want you to sign up for their storage and everything else.
Yeah,
and...
no, none of that. I made sure. That's why it took me so long to find one that was. Mm-hmm. I checked Consumer Reports and everything else. I found a decent one, but. I also bought, it comes with a 64 gig card, and I thought, that's a couple of days.
Yeah.
So I bought them each a 256 gig card, because that's the biggest it'll take. So now they've got two cards, and so if they ever need to, and there's an app, there's a phone app, so you can also download all the stuff to the phone directly, which probably takes even longer. But it does Wi-Fi, it does Bluetooth, so... You can do it that way if you want to.
I had to cut mine back from 4K 60, and it filled the card in 2 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So now I'm only doing 1080 30, I think.
Yeah.
And it's 2 weeks. Now, but I got some 128 gig cards for Christmas.
Nice.
The camera said 64, and that doesn't sound right.
Doesn't sound right.
Yeah. So I'm going to try the 128, see what happens.
Yeah,
and if that doesn't work, I'll put it in my real camera.
Right. I made sure that it said takes up to 256 gigs, so I bought those. There's a... so that was nice. And those were on sale, too. Look, I'm all about Woot.
Yeah.
I'm all about Woot. That came up, and I thought... Went back and looked at the description of the camera I bought. I said, yep, 256 gig. Buy three of them. Thank you very much. Done.
Today on Woot, year-end PC deal of the day from $399 to $1,119.99.
Don't talk to me.
Another notebook.
I look every single day, and every single day I say, not today, Satan.
You hope.
So far.
Bit of this, bit of that. 256 gig cards for $35.
Yeah. Oh, are they? What color are they?
The picture's white.
Oh, now he gets into colors.
Well, no, the color of mine was yellow, and it was some sort of little animated thing from some game, Mario Brothers.
This is PNY, so that's a pretty decent brand.
Yeah, PNY is a very decent brand. Yeah. Mine were, I think, Sony. They were obviously for like the Nintendo Switch or something, some special thing, and they were overstock, and so you know. Woot is owned by Amazon, so whatever they can't sell on Amazon, they sell on Woot. I'm happy with that.
The case of paper sold out. People really want a case of paper.
People want paper. People need paper. People still print. I print 4 sheets of paper a week.
Yeah.
That's it for me. But my wife uses the printer all the time. She prints labels a lot for market and worksheets and all of that stuff. I told her, I'm happy to move the printer downstairs. But if we move the printer downstairs, she might be listening today because she's home. If we move the printer downstairs, she's got to do all the loading and all of that stuff. It's upstairs, I do all of that. So.
Best story I heard recently, the big office copiers.
Sure.
That they're almost always on service contract.
Yep.
And a technician was saying he got a call from someone who said the printer was low on paper, so they put paper in and it still won't print. It's going to be a weird error. Don't know what it means. And so the tech went out and pulled open the paper drawer and saw the ream of paper there, still in the wrapping. So, yeah, okay, they put paper. Nowhere in the instructions does it say to take the wrapper off.
I got to tell this story again.
That's what made me think of it.
I got to tell this story again. Back when I was working at RIT in the IT department for the whole university, we were doing dial-up back in the day, dark ages. You had stone tablets and dial-up. And we put out a series of instructions. Here's, if you've got a PC, here's what you do. If you've got a Mac, here's what you do. And luckily, this was a Mac guy, so CR had to handle it, not me. This guy called up, and for days, CR could not figure out what his problem is. I've got it set up exactly the way, blah, 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 blah. Over and over and over again. Could not dial in, could not get a connection, could not get in. Finally, one day, CR said, "What's that noise in the background?" He said, "Oh, that's a truck going by." He said, "Have you got the window open?" Because it was kind of a cold day. He said, "No, I'm in the phone booth on the corner." "Why are you in the phone booth on the corner?" "Well, I don't have a phone in my apartment." Nowhere in our instructions did it say you had to have a phone line.
Working phone line.
Working phone line. That was on us.
Yep.
Immediately, we amended the instructions.
You think?
CR hadn't even hung up, and he was online amending the instructions. Well,
there would have been an instruction to plug in the power, plug in the phone line.
Yes, there was.
Where did he plug the phone line?
He may have had a non-working phone line in his apartment.
Yeah. And it never occurred to him.
Yeah.
Most houses.
Yeah, especially the previous owner or previous tenant shut off their services when they left.
It's standard. I mean, every house had, hookups for phones.
I've still got a cable coax sticking on our wall. I don't use it. It's not connected to anything.
Well, it's like when
I still got phone connections that I don't use.
I had, until this one truck came down to do a delivery, I used to have, because it was so many different businesses, they wound up, before I took it over, instead they just run another phone line.
Right.
And all of a sudden, when I moved in, there was like 8 of them out there.
Right.
And, once my late wife passed away, it's like, I don't need a phone in here. I got a cell. I went out there, clipped all 8 of them down. Boom, dropped them because they were changing out the telephone poles in the back. So I took all 8 of them, rolled them up, took them back to there. Boy, there's no less.
Yeah.
Junk hanging from the side of the house because it was so much stress. With those lines, that they had a hook on the side of the house that I was able to just, once I cut the line, hold it up, and all of a sudden it dropped. And the rest of the lines down along the side of the house, and I had to clip those and got rid of them all.
Yep, that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, again, now nobody, I don't know of too many folks, unless it's a business, has a phone line in the house.
Back when I was running a BBS, we had our home line plus 2 lines for the BBS. So I had 3 lines coming into my house.
I used to have 4.
Yep. Didn't Phil have like 8 at one time?
8? Well, that's got to be half of what he had.
Yeah. That's because he ran the main mail.
Mother and father.
Yeah, the main servers.
Yeah, well, when I had the business going, I had 4 lines. One was for the faxing and that type of stuff, and then the other 3 were for the business. And, but they all did it on one run because there was the pair. There was four pairs.
Flex or whatever it's called. Yeah.
You could do that.
Yeah. No,
long gone.
I remember those days. I was running OS 2 because it was multitasking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh.
In those days. So I could run 2 lines simultaneously.
Yep. It's supposed to be OS 2 on the server and Windows on the desktop.
Right. Right.
That IBM-Microsoft partnership didn't last very long.
No, it really didn't. Not once Microsoft stole everything from... Excuse me. Learned about things from IBM, they dumped IBM fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So, did we talk about this at the beginning, or was this off-air, about how they've just had a big emergency meeting at Microsoft? They even dragged Bill Gates in.
You mentioned it, yeah.
Where people just aren't buying Windows 11 right now. And that's, they're very upset. Well, look, there comes a point where people buy what they want, not what you want them to buy. And, it's real easy to stick candy bars at the counter for an impulse buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not real easy stick an operating system on the counter for an impulse.
Especially since people resist change, go out of their way not to change anything.
Right. Well, the other bigger
call you got last week about Yahoo Mail changed their interface again. I got like three or four of them, too.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, you can use the back to old interface button, but that will go away.
That will go away. And yes, people don't like change. Linux Mint just made a change to their operating system. Just a few things, like what icons they use. You can go back to the old ones. That's your choice. But they give you interesting new ones that are...
But
that
Windows 11 didn't really change on anything other than, moving the start bar into the middle.
That's a massive change. I can't work with
it. It's a huge change. People go crazy.
Oh, yeah. I know it. But you can put it back. But as far as performance or anything else, it did zip.
Yeah.
Oh, well, speaking of Yahoo Mail, they're lowering their quota from 1 terabyte to 20 gigabytes of mail.
Wow!
So if you have a lot of mail on Yahoo, you better start archiving it. I'm using 20 megabytes in my account.
Wow!
So it won't affect me.
Right. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Listen, you know the phone numbers. So if you don't, they're at soundbites.org. Give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more Soundbites. I'm member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Well, I read the Apple News. Apple's Wallet app is used for a lot of things, from storing car keys to event tickets, credit cards, and more. One of the more popular wallet features is boarding passes. Saving boarding passes to Apple Wallet makes it quick and convenient to access those passes right when you need them. Currently, you can add boarding passes for United, Delta, and Southwest with Air Canada, American Airlines, JetBlue, Jetstar, Lufthansa Group, Qantas, and Virgin Australia joining them soon. Apple's App Store woes aren't over yet. They were hit with a $116 million fine on Monday. Chump change for them. After Italy's competition authority alleged Apple was abusing its dominant position to harm third-party developers in its app store. The Italian competition authority said that an app tracking transparency privacy policy that Apple introduced in 2021 forced third-party developers to seek consent twice for the same data collection, and requiring such double consent was extremely burdensome and harmful to some developers, especially the smallest developers.
And 95% of people said ask app not to track.
I'm not an Apple dev, so I don't know how onerous this extra consent request is or what additional documentation is required. But yeah, most people don't want tracking to begin with. Apple has announced a seemingly late, surprisingly critical decision to force all iPhone users avoiding iOS 26 to upgrade now. It seems that future security fixes will only be available to iOS 26 and later users. Apple has, what is that, Microsoft all over again?
Yeah.
Apple has confirmed that iPhones are under attack again with more mercenary spyware found in the wild. There has been some reluctance to upgrade to iOS 26. The lure or otherwise of liquid glass storage limitations plus the usual inertia. But Apple has decided they know better than you. If you have an iPhone 11 or newer, you must not delay the upgrade. Move along, citizen. Who do you think owns that phone anyway? Apple is said to be expanding the share of iPhone memory at sources from Samsung due to rapidly rising memory prices. The shift is expected to result in Samsung supplying roughly 60 to 70% of the low-power DRAM used in the iPhone 17 compared to the more even split with SK Hynix in previous generations, with Micron also participating as a smaller supplier. The change is occurring against the backdrop of tightening supply in the global memory market, as memory manufacturers realize they can charge AI companies four times as much for the same memory they've been selling to the consumer market. In a related note, the DRAM shortage is really going to test Apple's mettle, because it now needs to think of various strategies that will enable it to maintain its margins while also paying a hefty premium for 12 gig LPDDR5X RAM chips. Apple, along with many other companies, is being forced to cough up 130% more for the same RAM they were buying earlier in 2025. At the start of the price, at the start of the year, the price of every 12 gigabyte LPDDR5X RAM chip was between $25 and $29, but that figure has climbed to $70, marking a 230% premium. Now, it's in a pretty strong position because it already has secured a large shipment prior to the surge in DRAM costs, but those supplies aren't going to last, and particularly since the iPhone 18 is rumored to ship with six-channel LPDDR5X memory for increased bandwidth and AI performance. And, of course, Apple's not the only one, so brace yourself. Once you're braced, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. It looks like, hello, learn to type. It looks like what I've been saying about RAM is going to hit the phone market, too. So if you were planning on buying a new phone later next year,
Yeah,
earlier is better, and it may be too late.
And part of the growing RAM in most phones is the AI models that
All
the companies are pushing.
Right. So chips are more expensive, and AI uses bigger and more expensive and faster chips. RAM is more expensive, and AI uses bigger and faster RAM. Storage is more expensive, and they are increasing storage because nobody wants 4 gig in a phone anymore. 12 gig, 16 gig, 64 gig, 128 gig. Phones are going to cost a lot more next year. I don't know what that does to people who are on those I get a new phone every 2 year plans.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect those prices are also going to go up unless you're locked in. So I don't know how that I don't know how that's going to play out. I think that depends on the carrier and your particular plan with that carrier. But you know, right now, like one company is advertising, "Oh, we'll give you a new iPhone every 2 years."
Maybe.
Yeah, you think? Maybe not so much net from now on. So we'll see.
When there's also rumors that Apple's going to be splitting up their phone releases. Right now they do the regular phones and the Pro phones in September.
Yep.
There's a rumor that they're going to start doing the Pro phones in September and the regular phones in March, or vice versa. No, it's, you know, there's rumors both ways.
Right.
And so that will avoid. See what happens now. They release the new phones in September, and their fourth quarter doesn't get much of a bump because the quarter ends in September.
Right.
So their first quarter is the Christmas quarter. Because that's, so if they can spread out those iPhone sales over the year more, that's better for the investors.
Yes, exactly. Not you.
Yeah.
Unless you're one of the major investors. And I don't mean you've got four stock.
I used to own one share of Apple stock.
Right, share. Right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jack from Gates, New York. What's up, Jack?
I have a laptop with Windows 11 and another laptop with Linux Mint. If I want to go on the Internet and do shopping on Amazon or go into my bank and do transactions, is one of those machines more inherently safe than the other?
No. Yes. Maybe.
But no.
Could be.
Okay. So, in general, a Linux laptop will be safer than Windows. Particularly since Windows seems to be, their telemetry is huge. They take everything you do. Everything you do. And send it to Microsoft. Whether you like it or not, whether you agreed to it or not, that all happens in the background. And you don't get a say. It's not your computer.
It's in one of those tiny print terms and conditions you click when you start up Windows.
Right, and never read. The 17 pages, they put it way near, like, the middle somewhere. So Mint will be inherently better at that than Windows. The second part, that's the yes. The no is it depends on what browser you use. That really should be the maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what browser you use. So if you use a browser like Brave, then yes, everything is secure. Brave does not track you. No, Brave does not track you by default. You could turn on tracking if you want to for certain things. I don't know why anyone would, but you have that choice. If you use Chrome or you know, one of the Chromium-based browsers, the likelihood that you will be tracked is very high. If you use Firefox, the likelihood that you will be tracked is lower, but not nearer to zero. In Brave, it's dang near zero.
Yeah, and then on the well, on the gripping hand,
on the third hand, Sierra Ward.
Yeah, most of the threats on the internet are fake tech support virus warnings. Right. That they want you to call fake tech support to steal your money.
I got another call from somebody who said, I called Microsoft. No, you didn't.
Yep.
Sorry.
Very hard to find a phone number for Microsoft.
Yep.
Place. But so what's kind of funny is, depending on how lazy the bad guys are, it will say, call Microsoft support on your Mac or your Linux box. Right. Some of them are smart enough to now say, call Apple or call, who would they say for Linux?
Nobody.
Call Linus.
call Linus Torvalds. But yeah, so, Jack, to get actually back to your question, did that answer that? Mint is safer than Windows. Brave is safer than any other Chromium-based browser or... under certain circumstances, Firefox.
Is there a version of Brave that is compatible with Linux Mint Cinnamon?
In fact, you can download it from their software store.
For free.
Great. Thank you very much. That helps me a lot.
You're welcome. Have fun. I've been using Brave more and more and more. It is a Chromium-based browser. You can tell it, oh, why don't you go get all of my bookmarks from Chrome,
mm-hmm.
and then just move right in. Thank you very much. And it is safer and more secure. One of the cool things about it is when you start it up, it tells you, oh, we blocked over the last, you know, however long you've been using it, we blocked 185 of this and 15,000 of that and 400 of the other. So it's nice to see that. And I do like Brave. You can support, you can do some of that stuff using something like AdGuard, AdBlocker, as an extension on Chrome. But Chrome is from Microsoft. Microsoft makes their money on your data.
Google.
What did I say?
Microsoft. But Microsoft Edge is now Chromium.
Right. So it's still the same soup.
Yeah.
But Chromium is an independent product.
Which is 90% Google.
Which is 90% Google. But it is an open source product. So what Brave did is took it and got rid of all the telemetry. All of it. Gone. Done. Anybody else who uses the Chromium base, like Chrome or Edge or Vivaldi or any of the others, you don't know how much they've removed, if any.
Yeah.
Or who gets those data?
Well, they're not going to tell you either.
Right. But so far, at least, Brave being 100% open source, a lot of people have done their due diligence on that one and seen that it is.
DuckDuckGo, I wound up
DuckDuckGo is good, too.
Yeah, I pulled my all my stuff, you know, bookmarks and everything else from Chrome over to that. And
there isn't a DuckDuckGo browser for Linux yet.
Yeah.
So that's why I say.
Oh, yeah. Brave, no, you got to go with what is available for your operating system. And for me, I just appreciate not getting, you know, if I do a search on something and say, you go ahead and purchase it, Chrome keeps hitting you with those stupid ads. Well, you look into getting this.
Right.
I already bought it 6 months ago. Leave me alone.
Right. And even no matter what browser you use, you can go to the DuckDuckGo website and do your searches there.
That's where I do everything.
Now, again, that search may be watched by whatever browser you're using, unless you're using Brave.
Right.
So the combination of Brave and DuckDuckGo, to me, is the way to go.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, but I do like DuckDuckGo. I do like Brave. I use Brave for most things these days, and I find that it is just as fast, if not faster, than Chrome. And it's the same code base.
Yeah.
So it
I can have all my tabs.
Yeah, and I have not yet found a version of Linux that does not have Brave as part of their software distribution, their software store, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
You know, some call it the app store, the software store, the repositories. So I do know that it's in Linux Mint's repository. I do know that it's in Xorin's repository. I do know that it's in Ubuntu's repositories. So, I'm not currently running Arch or Catchy OS or any of the others, but I would be surprised if it isn't in there. Particularly something like Catchy or certainly Kali. Anyway, the point I'm making is you can secure yourself better by being aware of what you're using. It is almost impossible to be private under Windows because Microsoft will take your data whether you like it or not. It is difficult to be private under Google, under Chrome, because Google will take your data whether you like it or not.
Yeah, private browsing protects you against your spouse using the same computer.
Right.
Not anyone else
right.
on the internet.
All private browsing does is it means somebody can't go look at your history. That's all private browsing does.
Yep.
So don't get excited by that. But if you use something like Brave, you can set it up so that, you know, you go to a site and it says, can we send you this or can we do that or can we put a cookie on your machine? You can say yes all day long because one of the settings in Brave is destroy all cookies when I close this browser. Okay.
Yeah, I can handle that.
I can handle that. That's not a problem. Go ahead. Do what you want out there.
And not have to worry about it.
Right.
Or, you know, second guess that, oh, am I going to get all these TD ads that, you know, let me get this and get that? And
now, you will still get, if you go to a website that has built-in ads, you will still see the ads.
Yeah.
That's not Brave doing that.
That's just part of that web page.
You can block those as well, but that's an add-on. That's what ad blocker does. It blocks, it's right in the name, blocks ads. It's right there on the tin. So, but you can do all of those things. You can make yourself pretty secure on the internet by using a non-Microsoft operating system, a non-Google browser, and a couple of specific add-ons.
And then make sure you use good, long, strong passwords.
That's very important.
That's the biggest thing for any OS, any browser. If you have a weak password for your bank, then someone's going to guess it and steal all your money.
Well, and even better than that, of course, now is the authenticators.
Yep, and passkeys.
Passkeys, which is what an authenticator is.
Yep.
And so any site that lets you do that, where you can put in your, it'll come up and say, go to your phone and look at the authenticator and type in the numbers. Or for a Google site, it will also say, look at your phone and press the correct number. Like 93 comes up, and you look in your phone, there's three numbers, one of them is 93. You tap on 93, and then the website suddenly lets you in. Those are inherently more secure than passwords. They are inherently more secure than biometric stuff. They're just more secure.
And text messaging has never been secure.
And that's still better than passwords.
Yeah.
Because almost nobody steals your password from your machine. What they do is they break into the company that's keeping your password and steal it from them.
And 17 billion leaked accounts.
Right.
The other end is real bad at keeping secrets.
And that's why we say use a password manager and never use the same password twice. So even if it gets stolen, you only lose that account.
Yep.
Not any other.
Well, that's one thing, though. I am so pleased with NPass. And again, they're not paying us to say any of this, but I have been able to create such long passwords and very complicated ones that there's no way in hell I could even remember how to type them.
Yep.
Right.
Because they are so long and complex that now I don't worry about my Facebook or anything that me all of a sudden being hacked because I know they can't guess that password. There's just no way on earth that they're going to get into there. And I can sit back and relax and not have to go through that. Because unless you've been through that once, folks, I mean, I had over 20 years of Facebook information out there from my account that was all of a sudden just totally wiped out.
And, so,
and it was gone.
And two-factor authentication helps with that as well.
Yeah,
and make sure you have up-to-date recovery information, a second email address.
Right.
And they didn't care. They just said, well, just go ahead and create a new account.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah.
And Steve just made an excellent point. Go into your important stuff, your bank, your Facebook, whatever's important to
your email, because that's such a key.
And look at the email addresses that are there. And also look at the recovery email addresses.
Yeah.
Because you said it once. One of your email addresses, or maybe he said it, doesn't have it anymore.
Yep.
So if you're
when he lost his thing, he couldn't do a recovery because the email address didn't exist anymore.
Because that was
if your Gmail recovery address is Vivinet.
I loved Vivinet.
You're never going to get back into that account.
That's exactly right.
No, what my problem was is I had a second email account, but it was when I had the business going.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
And that went away.
And you never went and changed that, and so you couldn't get back in. That's my point.
Yeah.
Go check all of those. Make sure they're up to date.
Yep. So when Gmail came out, Yahoo Mail was a little earlier. So when Gmail came out, most people used their Yahoo address as their recovery.
Right.
Well, Yahoo had a breach a few years ago. Every single one of Yahoo's 3 billion accounts was breached.
Yep.
Go change your Yahoo password, but make sure your recovery address now may not go to Yahoo. If you don't use your Yahoo address or anything, make sure you have a second address somewhere else. We used to say spouse's address, but with breakups, that doesn't work.
Yeah,
doesn't necessarily work well.
You can have multiple addresses, and all you have to do is go look at them once in a while. Yep.
Forgot my password link. It sends you a text message, sends you an authenticator, sends an email to your recovery address. If you can't get any of those, then you're screwed. Basically.
I used to get an awful lot of text messages that said to change your password, click here.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah,
I didn't ask to change my password. I am not clicking here.
Yeah. We have seen a lot of people, often at the Apple store, someone forgets their Apple ID password. They're setting up a new computer. They just make a new Apple ID with a new password. Great. Now you've just lost access to all of the music and apps and videos you purchased because that's all under the old Apple ID.
That's right.
So you have to be able to log into that old ID to get access, unless you don't mind repurchasing everything.
Well, that's on you. That's exactly right. In this economy, maybe you do. Who knows? But yeah, nobody wants to be a systems administrator. I was one for 20 plus years and I don't want to be one anymore, but I am one and I have to remain one because I have to manage my systems. And part of those systems is my banking stuff, all my passwords, all of that stuff. You have to be able to keep it and use it. And the only way to keep it safe and secure is to follow all these procedures. And we've talked about them. Use good passwords. Use a password manager. Authenticators or some sort of key is better than a password and certainly better than text messaging. You know all of this. It just takes time and effort to do it, and we're all lazy. But you know what?
New Year's resolution.
New Year's resolution. This is the time to do that. Make it your New Year's resolution to get yourself all cleaned up when it comes to that stuff. Get it done and get it done now. We're having a problem.
Yeah.
Is
your second spring gone? And then no. Okay, I see.
It's there. It's just.
It's sprung.
Yeah.
It's just tired. All right, that music tells us we are done for this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Good questions this week. I want to thank everybody who was listening. I want to thank the 170 people. Where did you come from? God bless each and every one of you who so far have voted in the polls. I hope more of you do. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. See how nice I was to you today? I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. That's right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue with your support to be member-supported. I want to wish each and every one of you the felicitations of the season, and we will see you next year on Soundbites.